This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. In the week when football has once more been forced to face the disruption of COVID, particularly in the Sky Bet Championship and particularly in the case of QPR, who've postponed two consecutive home games following, in their words, a number of positive tests amongst players and staff and insufficient numbers to fulfil fixtures. In Sky Bet League One, Stephen Schumacher said taking over from best friend Ryan Lowe as manager of Plymouth Argyle was an opportunity he couldn't turn down. It's currently 4 defeats in 5 for Plymouth. And in Sky Bet League Two, under caretaker manager Salim Benachour, relegation threatened Oldham Athletic came from 4-1 and 5-3 down to draw 5-5 with leaders Forest Green Rovers. Just over a week to go to Christmas. It's the official EFL podcast. What a great time to be a fan of Blackburn Rovers, who are in the highest position since they were relegated from the Premier League in 2012. They've won their last four without conceding and 7 of their past 9. We can talk to manager Tony Mowbray. And listen, we'll come on to COVID in a moment because I know it's a sort of affecting the way in which you're going to work over the Christmas period. But first of all, do we have to just rejoice at the wonderful place the club are in right now, Tony?
Listen, I don't think anybody's getting carried away internally inside the football club, which, you know, we just know how hard this league is. Every game is tough. The away games are always tough in the Championship, and then you look at the home games and you think, oh, if we get that one right, we could get 3 points here, and yet invariably those games that you think you should be getting points are the ones that kick you up the backside, really. So we just prepare for each game, we keep going, we're on a good run at the moment. The players are, you know, I've said a lot this year, they're a very young group of players. Some of them making their first marks in professional football, and they're doing really well. And we just have to keep going, and nobody's shouting anything this season for our team, but the results are there for us, and we just have to keep going next game.
Yeah, I've been in the game long enough to know that was a stupid question because you were always going to tell me it's only the halfway point. but Tony, do you push the group and let them think about the possibilities, or do you sort of encourage them to keep their feet on the ground? Which way around is it? To push the momentum or to try and not let them get carried away?
Well, to work hard in training every single day, and then when the games come, to remind them what we've done to achieve the results that we've had. I think I think this league and the size of the squads and the age of the squad, we can't get carried away. Listen, you said you've been in the game a long time. I've been in it a long time. I remember being manager of Middlesbrough around 2011-12 and being top of the table 2 years on the bounce going into New Year and missing playoffs both years. And so nobody gets carried away. I know I don't get carried away because I've been right at the top and then missed out for varying reasons. It can be lack of form or lack of confidence, but it can also be injuries. It can be anything. And in the world we live, it could be COVID. Let's stay very grounded. Everybody work really hard for each other. The good thing is to come into work every day and see this group of players really like each other's company and work really hard for each other and having a great rapport with each other. It reminds me of the middle 80s of a young Middlesbrough team, and that everybody grew up together and worked really hard. So that's where we are at the moment. No one's getting carried away. Just a lot of young lads working really hard for each other.
Yeah. Nobody's getting carried away, except I've just gone on all our yesterdays back about 35 years, and I've got a big smile on my face, and I'm reminded of certain somebody's flying, diving header against Aston Villa. But let's just leave that for another day, shall we? Tony, yeah. The thing about that run, 7 wins out of 9, is there was probably one of the low points of your career in the middle of that, which, again, I just don't get. Football, yeah. I don't want to say it. Do you know what I'm talking about, or do I have to actually say the number?
No, that's fine. It's okay, because we put it to bed very, very quickly, because if it was something that we'd been getting beat 3-0, 4-0, you know, every once a month or something like that, and it was in us, we would feel as if, yeah, we've got a problem. But we put it to bed very, very quickly. We played against what we would consider, I would probably consider, the best team in the league that night. We played with 10 men for way over an hour. at 2-0 at half time, we decided to be really positive and see if we can get the next goal, and yet we found ourselves 4-0 down pretty quickly. And then their quality just picked us off towards the end of the game after we decided to sit everybody behind the ball and stop the goals going in. It was difficult. They've got really good players, and you don't dwell on it too long. You put it in the bin very fast and move on.
Block your ears, and I'll just remind the listeners in case anybody hasn't worked it out. I'm talking about the 0-7 to Fulham. Listen, we are recording this about 48 hours before your home game with Birmingham. COVID is engulfing the whole country again, and right this second, you just had a big meeting to get used to the reimposition of protocols. Are we back to where we were at the heart of lockdowns?
Yeah, it looks like it. I think, we can't have our meeting room anymore. We have to get spaced out in the dining areas. I think it's just hit so fast, you know. I think we had 5.5-6 hours on a coach coming back from Bournemouth at the weekend, and one of the players who was on that coach has tested positive. The people who sat anywhere near him, within 2 metres of him, have all had to isolate and test every day. So training gets affected, of course, moving towards the next game. And as I say, within the building, we can't use our meeting rooms anymore. We're trying to project off a big white wall in the gymnasium to show Birmingham's strengths and weaknesses, and to show, how we're going to set up the team. And yeah, lots of things. Everybody's got face masks. We're just back to where we were, for a lot of months within the last year.
I mean, the guys are all human beings. You've got families to protect. Are you fearful that as you have to go about your business, a huge amount of travelling, tight-knit group, physically quite close to each other, are you worried? Do you worry about COVID and taking it into your home afterwards?
Well, I think first and foremost, we've been living with it for a long, long time now. Is it 2 years, 18 yeah. months? We've lived with it, really. It softens off a little bit. I mean, I like everybody else, a year and a bit ago, it was a major incident to go shopping or a major incident to go to the petrol station. It's not such an incident now, and yet I am anyway back to putting the gloves on when I fill up with petrol, constantly having my mask on as I get out of my car. If you believe things that you see, and the messages are so mixed, Omicron, people say, all viral infections, they will continue to mutate and have different strains, but they generally, as they do that, they get less dangerous to your health. Now, whether that's going to be the case, whether there is a huge increase in hospitalizations and deaths, we have to see. At this moment, sitting here now, I don't see, the huge numbers of deaths and hospitalizations. Whether that's coming, we'll have to see. But my family are young, my children are young still. They've started, under 12, they've started their vaccinations via the school and stuff. But I sit here like everybody else, really, trying to do the protocols, trying to live our lives properly and with the guidance, and hopeful. I would never sit and be fearful. What will be will be. If I catch it, go into the supermarket or to the petrol station, and I'll deal with the consequences, and the same with my family. And regarding my profession and my job, as long as we do all the protocols as a football team and a football club and try to do everything properly, it still doesn't mean that your club isn't going to get affected by it. But because you can't follow people around 24 hours of the day. But we hope that we can stay clear of it and play our football matches and keep our momentum going.
I mean, I don't want to go from deeply serious to too trivial, but when Tony Mowbray goes to the supermarket, what's the first thing he puts in his basket?
Chocolate usually, mate. I'm partial to some chocolate, but I'm usually under orders from the wife. I know if I go to the supermarket, I have a big long list written out, not by me, but by the wife. So I just take orders off the wife generally.
Final question. Is this a big 6 months coming up for Blackburn Rovers? Certain players out of contract, maybe some players that are suddenly going to be very coveted. The manager's own future. Lots and lots to deal with over the next 6 months.
Well, I think those incidents, those issues that are there for the football club, you know, at a time when, again, it looks like COVID is raising its ugly head. And, my concern is would be for the young players that this club are now producing. And, Armstrong was sold in the summer, but we obviously lost Harvey Elliott, an amazing footballer, back to Liverpool, who started for the champions, basically, when he picked up his injury, of course. But we've lost some really talented players. But on the back of those players going, other people have stepped forward. Ben Brereton-Diaz, of course, being the main guy who stepped forward for us with his goals this season. But the likes of Rothwell and Nyambi and Lenahan, who were all out of contract, are been huge players for us and done exceptionally well. We have to see, you know, how the next few months roll, really. I think what I would say for the football club is that they can only pay what we pay. There is a budget, we have the budget, and if we can fit giving new contracts out to the players and within the salary means that we can afford, then we will do that. And if we can't, then we'll have to see what the interest on these players is.
Keep going, Tony. And listen, when the chocolate Santas get put on the Christmas tree at the training ground, they're not all for you, okay, mate?
Top man. Cheers, Clem. Lovely to talk to you.
Merry Christmas, mate. See you later, mate. Thank you.
Bye-bye, buddy. Bye-bye.
Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, the top two continue to splutter. After their seven consecutive wins, it's now four consecutive draws for Fulham. And having gone the first 15 games of the season unbeaten, Bournemouth have now lost three of their last seven, during which they've taken just 6 points. There was a winning start for Ryan Lowe in charge for the first time of Preston North End at home to Barnsley, and Birmingham City have renamed part of St Andrews in tribute to the tragically murdered six-year-old Arthur Labino Hughes.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Is there a finer sight in football than an informed striker? Let's ask the man who currently tops the scoring charts in Sky Bet League One, despite the fact that Cole Stockton's team, Morecambe, are in the division's bottom four. At the time of recording this week's official EFL podcast, he's rattled in 13 in the league and 16 in all competitions, including, I would argue, English football's goal of the season to date. He's 60-yarder in injury time in his team's Derby Day win at Fleetwood Town, who, quite coincidentally, they play in the reverse fixture this coming weekend. So here's the question, as I look at you, Cole, looking all snuggly and comfortable on your sofa, how many times have you sat there and watched that goal back? And I want you to be absolutely honest with us.
You know what? I didn't even keep count. It was a few times. Just looking back on Twitter as well, like how many views it had on that. I seen a little angle behind the goal, which looks so much better. As to how it started off, it was like it just started off outside the post and came in. But like once I've hit that, it was felt like slow motion. Do you know what I mean? And I was just thinking, just don't go over or hit the bar. But as soon as I seen the net ripple, I was like, oh my god!
It was awesome. I mean, I can't imagine the feeling that runs through you when something like that happens. Because are they maybe a once in a career moment, do you think, to be that accurate?
I think so, yeah. Just with the timing of the game as well. Like 94th minute, I didn't have the legs to run the defender there, no chance. And I had nothing to lose, do you know what I mean? Worst case scenario, it lands on the main road over the stand or a goal kick, whatever. But like it's 1-1 at that point, and we would have took a point anyway at that timing of the game. But to come up with that, and then just see what it meant to everyone, all our staff and that, all out the dugout, all the fans behind the goal as well. And like, as you've seen, the celebrations was incredible.
Do you know what? I'm in my little head, as you're describing, like you didn't have the legs to run or anything, I'm reminded, it's another Scouser actually, but he played decades ago. He's a player called Billy Ashcroft, played for Middlesbrough in the late 1970s. He ended up running the George pub in Southport. Anyway, long story short, he was called the Bear of Bruges because he made his name at Wrexham and he had this giant, great, big hairstyle. Anyway, Borough signed him, but he was out of favour. So he got the weekend off and went to his mate's wedding just down the road. And then all of a sudden there was an injury crisis and he gets the call into the squad, gets put on the bench, Cole,
half
and
cut.
Then half cut because he'd been to the wedding, then gets the somebody gets injured, so he has to come on. He said he was all over the place. He was just, I don't know who the hell it was against. He said he was just inside the opposition's half, and he thought, there's no way I'm running here. So he just lamped it. It was the worldie of all worldies, and that's what you describe in there, just reminded.
To be honest, I reckon I'm quicker half cut.
Do you think so?
I reckon I would be, you know, if you're ever trying to flag a taxi or anything, or you know what I mean, and just you get into fourth gear and open your legs, but so that'd be interesting. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, I tell you what, Cole, who'd you play on Boxing Day? Because we could put it to the test, couldn't we?
Bolting away.
Can't well, mate.
I'll be risking nothing there. So.
Well, I mean, you know, let's just hope Stephen Robinson's not listening. And just between you and I and anybody that's listening to the official EFL podcast,
yeah.
Where do you think this current hot streak of goal scoring has come from? It's similar to the ratios you got at Tranmere in your early days. Then you had that kind of drift through your loan spells, etc. But where's it come from, Cole, this season?
You know what? I couldn't tell you. I really couldn't. I'd like to think it's off the last season as well with the promotion and just finding myself more than anything, growing into my body, knowing what I'm about as well and what I'm good at, and just more believing in myself as well and stuff like that. Because you're all going to have the doubters and all stuff on socials that you see, like getting promoted. Like it'll always stick with me. Like you see tweets like literally minutes after getting promoted. Look at your phone, you see a tweet and it's like, oh, we'll end up back in League 2, no problem. And then the first 2 months I get Player of the Month back to back, and I'm just thinking, like, do you know what I mean? It's just so bittersweet to feel like that. And then once you score early doors as well, it just gets that weight off your shoulders.
So you're saying the actual club and team promotion gave you confidence as an individual?
Yeah, definitely. Because last season alone, we were favourites to go down. Like our team last year was basically a bunch of lads put together who no one wanted. Lowest budget in the league, favourites to go down, and it got to the point in the season where we were like, and we were all on 80% pay as well, which I know a majority of people was, and it just got to that point of the season where we were just like we're in a decent like position here to go and do something. And I'll never forget our manager. We were in on a Sunday. He had us in every Sunday, by the way. Literally, we're getting home after night games, forward roll in bed, back to it, and like we were on the training pitch, and he was just like, don't worry about the playoffs, lads, go and get promoted. And like I think that just sort of sparked something in us then, to like fully realise knowing what we can do. And like we played Bolton at home, and I think that was a little bit of a decider, and one of our lads, Kelvin, got sent off early doors, which sort of just tipped the game up a bit. But then to get through by the playoffs as well, I think that's the best way, playoffs, to go and do it at Wembley also.
As long as it's guaranteed, obviously. You don't want to get to
that's it, that's yeah. it. Obviously, looking back now, it was like I wouldn't change it.
You mentioned you know what you're good at. So come on then, who are your footballing heroes? Who might you have moulded your game on? You know, what are your strengths? What are your weaknesses?
Yeah, I think just growing up, I'd always watched the likes of Rooney, Shearer, all them types of forwards, and I don't know, like, coming through my scholarship and that, you're raw behind the ear, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? It's just, you fully don't know what you're about. Like, I've always scored goals as a kid, but, like, they don't, I'm like a horrible striker, old school striker, which you don't see them no more.
Yeah.
You don't, you really don't. And I think one of the old managers said to me, who was it? Gary Bradman, it was, said to, like, you a little bit like Mark Hughes. And obviously he wasn't my era, so I didn't really see much of him. So someone like that, like just an old school striker I am.
Yeah, that can get stuck in, but clearly has the finesse there as well to be able to finish in a variety of ways.
Yeah, definitely. Do you know what I mean? It's our bread and butter. It's what we get judged on, goals also. So yeah, definitely. And like I said, I've always grew up scoring goals. It's just nice that to show them though.
So to that end then, are you also a bit of an obsessive when the game's over, you're on the coach on the way home, you've got another couple, you're looking at the scoring charts and you're going, oh, right, so Smith's got another couple for, oh, he's breathing down the back of my pants now.
Yeah, you know what? Not really. That doesn't faze me at all because, like, the start of the season, it was just, I want to be on double figures. That's, like, what I tell myself to start of each season, get double figures. that'll be nice. But then now to be on 16 at this time of the year, it's just like, oh, I'm gonna go and do that again now. You know what I mean? I'd more goals to what I'm on now.
Yeah. Obviously, you had a surprise start, didn't you? You got the point away at Ipswich, won the next game, things. And then obviously you've drifted and you find yourself in the current position. I mean, first of all, when you had that start and you were up near the top, presumably what you said about confidence, that had an effect on the squad. But does reality bite, Cole? Is it a hell of a step up from 2-1?
I'd say it is a step up, yeah. You're playing against better teams who are going to take chances and punish you properly, which we have been punished in a lot of areas on the pitch. But I think now it's the time where it shows now with our team and the lads. It's just like rolling your sleeves up and just see who like the real leaders are. You know what I mean? The staff and all that give us as much information as they can on the opposition, and it's just finding now within ourselves to just every game now to just keep grinding it out and then just put like apply ourselves on them.
I suppose, is there a fine line as well between being the little team in the division and going, we'll show them, that kind of attitude you described of yourself, how you're motivated by seeing tweets. But on the other side of things, you could let yourselves off the hook, because let's be frank, if you went down, nobody would bat an eyelid. They'd just say it's the natural order of football. So is that a balancing act in the chemistry of the squad and team dynamics?
People from the outside will look in like that, like saying they are the underdog in the majority of games. But I think as a squad and a club, we can't have that title for ourselves. We're in that league for a reason. We've earned it. Now we've just got to just not take it for granted and just make our club a name and like a proper League One team.
Do you feel like you're making history? I mean, you obviously are because of the position the club's in, but do you feel like you're all leaving your stamp on the history of this club that's been around for decades and decades and decades?
It's tough to do. You know what I mean? Because of like the players they've had in the past and managers and that. But I'd like to think we have done partly, yeah, especially getting into League One, the highest they've ever been as well. And then just some good days out also. You know what I mean? With the Tottenham game coming up also, that'll be a nice day for the club and the fans. Going back to Wembley last summer, just like days that no one can take away from us and them.
The managerial change, has it made a big difference to you personally?
Yeah, I'd say it has. It's challenged me a lot. Because it's changed my game. Not like drastically, but it was a lot to take in early doors. But once the penny dropped with that, I felt like, oh my God, yeah, it's easy now. I know I can do it. Like, just his playing styles. But it's so basic and effective. And that's it. And everyone's bought into it.
Is it slightly more suited to your style, are we saying?
I think so, yeah. Because last season I was doing a lot of unnecessary running and work, whereas now I'm still doing the same amount. But, like, I don't know, it's hard to word it, like, a lot more, like, professional and doing your work properly on the pitch as well, and just not, like, running around like a headless chicken. We're a lot more organised now.
Yeah. Well, we've enjoyed watching you for defo. Can I ask you a couple of other questions? First of all, give us a player's perspective on the current rise in COVID. I mean, when we tried to do this chat a little bit earlier, we had to abandon it because you're in the middle of doing a bit of Christmas shopping. But are you conscious of it a lot? Are you conscious of the fact of having to be uber careful that you're not the one that's in the wrong place at the wrong time, takes it into the changing room, etc., etc.? You think about it a lot, you guys?
Yeah, we do. We do all the measurements properly, wear face masks where and when we do. But you know what I mean? Not, we can't control what each other do, like go to the supermarket or go out for food with the missus. Do you know what I mean? It's worldwide, so we are going to pick it up. It's only natural because it's so big. But I think as long as we're taking it seriously and preventing it when and where we can, we're just giving ourselves and everyone else the best chance.
Yeah. And did you manage to get all your Christmas shopping done? Because as we speak, we're, what, about 10 days away from Christmas Day itself?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a few bits sorted anyway. But you know what I mean? You just have a little panic buy, don't you, towards the end of it, thinking you had a little stock and filler. But I'll do a little bit of online because it was chocker before in town.
Yeah, A sensible choice, although, of course, there's a shortage of delivery drivers as well. As I was telling producer Dave a little bit earlier, if you need to do an expedited delivery or anything, you need to get your orders in quick because they don't have enough drivers out there. Final question is... Actually, I've got two final questions. The penultimate one is, have you apologised to the people in the corner you rang towards when you scored the goal against Fleetwood, whipped your shirt off and were wobbling all over the place? Have you been and had a little...
What are you trying to say, wobbling there? I'm not that... I haven't got that...
I'm teasing you, mate. I'm teasing you. It was one of the great moments of the season.
You know what? I'm not apologising. Because I almost took my shorts off. And it could have been so. But no, it was... you know what I mean? You're not in control of what you do there, so...
Which leads me on to my final question. Can you put into words the feeling for a striker in form when the ball hits the back of the net, the sensations that run through you?
Yeah, no, it's just... I don't know, it's just a nice feeling, do you know what I mean? It's what you get judged on. So, I'm in that mentality now where I know I'm going to score each game. Obviously, it's not always going to happen, but if I'm in that mentality, it's the best chance I can give myself.
Fantastic. Well, here's to doing it again in the reverse game this coming weekend, huh?
Hey, let's hope so. I might retire if I do that again. I'd have to.
Mind you, will you get the chance? Because they'll be closing you down in your own penalty box, won't they, after what you did last time?
I mean, I'd be interested if the keeper's on the edge of the box still, but you know what I mean? Even Fleetwood, you know what I mean? They're a good side, so we'll be aware of them also.
Brilliant stuff. Cole, I'm delighted for you. I've enjoyed watching your goals flying this season. Great to talk to you. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, guys. And you have a nice Christmas. Speak soon.
There he goes. Here are the headlines from Sky Bet League One. Rotherham United's unbeaten record now stands at 21 games in all competitions and 15 in the league. Wycombe Wanderers' record league goal scorer Adebayo Akinfenwa notched his 50th for the club in their draw with one of his former clubs, AFC Wimbledon. It was his first for them in the EFL from outside the box, would you believe? And Doncaster Rovers, still with Gary McSheffrey in interim charge, picked up a much-needed fourth win of the season in their bargain basement clash with Shrewsbury Town.
This is the official EFL podcast.
It's been quite a past few weeks for Exeter City and one of Sky Bet League 2's management, Matt Taylors. We had the whole replaying of an FA Cup first round replay after officials inadvertently allowed them to field too many substitutes the first time around. And until approaching the end of November, they set a new club record of 15 league games unbeaten. I have to ask you, Matt, do you ever get muddled up with the other one, the Walsall Matt Taylor?
I do, Clem. And it's incredible because you find out what agents know what and which ones are the intelligent ones. Because obviously when Matt Taylor got the job at Walsall, my phone was red hot in the days leading up to it and the days afterwards from agents saying, what players do you need now you've gone in at Walsall? So it shows you who the intelligent agents are and the ones who do their research and the lesser ones, so to speak. So I do get mixed up with him every now and then. And we played him early on in the season, and I think the BBC did a bit of a piece on it in relation to the two Matt Taylors as management people in regards to that fixture. And obviously we'll get to play him again at some stage soon.
Yeah, I mean, I have a similar thing with Clem, because there was, sadly no longer with us, but Ray Clements, his son Stephen. And the other one was Paul Clements, obviously was manager of Swansea, of Reading. I've had offers, I've had texts offering me pre-season friendlies. what I think about whether my centre forward is good enough to play for his country. I'm like, what the hell is this? And actually, it's got nothing to do with football. I have to share this with you. I once got a call from the personal manager of Linda Robson, the actress who used to be in Birds of a Feather.
Okay.
And she thought I was a famous 60s drummer called Clem Cattini, who used to play, I think, on a load of old 60s records. And he had a band. And she thought I'm like in the middle of Tesco. She goes, oh, Linda Robson wants to know if you're willing to come and play at her, 50th birthday party. I'm like, I didn't even know what the hell the conversation was. So, listen.
You should have gone along with it because that's what I do with some of the agents. I just text back our requirements. We need a centre forward, a centre half, a centre midfielder. And then we see if they're sending through the same list to ourselves as what they're doing to Walsall.
I love it. Yeah, you say go along with it. What, until I've got like 200 sort of lovies all standing around me and I can't bat a note on a drum kit. I mentioned the unbeaten run, and what I find absolutely phenomenal is as we speak to you now, you've lost three of the last four since. And I look at what's happened at Bournemouth in the Skybet Championship. I look at what's happened at Plymouth. Is it a kind of, when an unbeaten run reaches the end, you kind of, the boys almost subconsciously let their guard down or something?
No, I just think it's the level that we play at Clem. And in all honesty, in those 20 games where we were unbeaten in for such a long period of time, the margins were so small in those games. We were never streaks ahead of the opposition. A lot of the times those games were level. We had a lot of luck during those 20 games. I can't deny that fact. And we also had a fully fit squad. And then you look at the last three, possibly four games, then the squad's been a lot weaker. So naturally, the team haven't quite performed to the same levels they did previously. Bit of luck has gone against us. And also, the opposition have played their part. So even amongst those 20 games, we knew, we kind of felt where we were as a league team at our level. And that was a mid-of-the-range team competing really well, producing really resilient displays. That was the biggest characteristic which came through during that 20-game period. With a little bit of quality on top. But in the last couple of weeks, we've just fallen slightly short through no less trying from the players. We've just not quite been good enough in those encounters we've had recently.
Is that something that we should take more into account? That just like in life itself, sometimes you try really, really hard and it doesn't quite work for you in whatever you're doing. And other times you're a bit more laissez-faire and a bit more chilled and big pots of gold drop into your lap. Luck is very much part of the game.
Oh, absolutely. And in terms of scorelines during games as well, they affect players. Certainly ourselves at Exeter City, because generally a lot of our squad and our starting team are made up of young players and academy products, which is fantastic in one regards, but then that they're feeling the pressure of the scoreline, of the expectation, of the crowd, of the referee and of the opposition as well. And like I say, we need to have our best 11 out there on a regular basis to be a top-level team in this league, because it's such a difficult league. And if we lose a couple, which we have done in recent weeks, then all of a sudden it puts more pressure on the other personnel. But we'll be absolutely fine. As much as I didn't read too much into that 20-game run, I've not read too much into the last three or four games. Because generally we look at the performances and we try and stay as level as we possibly can. And you never know, we might go on another 20-game run or we might lose the next three games. This league is so unpredictable this season.
Yeah, but you're quite predictable. If we look at something like your home record over the years, it's been pretty consistently good, hasn't it? So
yeah,
you say that.
Well, it's a long way. You know yourself, it's a long way to come to the Southwest. So we know what it takes out of us when we go away from home. So when teams come to our place, they'll have had pretty much a full day travelling on the Friday. They'll have probably trained somewhere on the way down, which is always a little bit disjointed. They'll have stayed in the hotel the night before, which isn't always beneficial. And they've got a long journey back after that as well. So we know how we feel when we go away from home. And our levels of fatigue always play a part in our weight performances. The distance we covered, the amount of sprints we make, it's never quite the same as a home game. So we really try to focus on making our home patch a fortress, which everyone does, because you want to be able to trust something as manager, and I want to be able to trust our home form. And generally, that's been pretty strong over the years. Obviously, the crowd played a part, the environment plays a part, the pitch plays its part. But also, I spoke about those young players. Young players want to feel comfortable in their surroundings, and they've played more home games than away games, and are more used to their environment and their build-up to a home game.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the whole Southwest thing, and I'd have probably left that because, I'm not going to call it a cliche. It's obviously circumstances, but I'm sure if everybody looks at you or at Plymouth, think, it's such a long way away, and all those kind of things. But to that end, then, how do you leave when you're going away from home? How do you alleviate boredom for yourself, for the players? Do you encourage them to have extracurricular activities, to read, to study, to, because that's a hell of a lot of time cooped up in a tin can on wheels.
It is. And first and foremost, Clem, whenever we sign a player, I tell them the truth. I tell them that every other weekend they're going to be away from home for 2 days from their family, or from the loved ones. And it's a really difficult period in relation to that. That time away from home and that time on a coach, which is basically dead time. And it's horrible to to describe it as that, but that's exactly what it is, because we have a structure where we train on the way, en route, usually at Gloucester FA, which is just outside Bristol. If we go further north than Birmingham, then we might look to train elsewhere. But because of the COVID situation, we've struggled for usage of training grounds elsewhere. Naturally, people don't want other clubs and other players using their training facilities. So we try and break up the journey as best we possibly can. But that doesn't stop the players from going on the iPads, watching a film, possibly reading a book, possibly doing some studying, like you said, playing cards like all players do every now and then. But one thing it probably does as well, because we have to spend so much time together, it strengthens the team spirit and strengthens the bond we have. So as much as I'll maybe moan and make excuses in relation to the negatives, it also has a lasting effect that we have to be a tight-knit group because we do spend a lot of time together.
Can we discuss just briefly, and I know it was a few weeks ago, but the whole saga you did have in the FA Cup. Have you ever come across anything like that in your life? I mean, it was disbelief for you, was it, when you're standing there in the middle of it?
Yeah, and you know, the communication we got from the officials before the game was that we were allowed the extra sub, the sixth sub, it added on time. The fact that ourselves, the officials and Bradford, were all working to the same rules and regulations made it, you know, made it obvious that we'd all made a mistake, if that makes sense, because Bradford tried to make their sixth substitution in added on time. The only fact that they'd missed the four opportunities to do their substitutions previously meant they couldn't bring that player on the pitch. So they would have broken the rules as well. The officials who were part and parcel of it had obviously broken the rules, but the information we got previous to the game and in the build-up of the game was wrong. So the fact that it was replayed shows that it wasn't just our mistake. And the fact that nobody noticed and nobody knew there was a mistake made until the following morning, including the 3,000 fans, including the opposition, including the officials, including ourselves, shows that we weren't quite working to the right rules and regulations in relation to that. But as manager, it's always the manager's responsibility. So I took the brunt of that and took it on my shoulders. And as much as it was good to get through the replay, it was just another game which obviously put more strain and pressure on the squad.
You say that, you took responsibility, which is what leaders do, but there was malinformation in there, I think, wasn't there, Matthew? So maybe we'll leave that hanging in the air. Now, listen, can we talk about you? Because, and I'm just wondering if we encountered each other at, maybe we didn't at Team Bath, actually, it was just a little bit. You weren't part of Team Bath's mercurial runs in the FA Cup in the early 2000s. You didn't come till later, did you?
No, I joined a season, possibly two seasons just after that. But it was a similar personnel. Obviously, Paul Tisdale was part of bringing me to Team Bath. Ironically, he got the Exeter City job in the summer. I signed for Team Bath. Bertie Kozic went from Team Bath to Exeter City. And then myself and Neil Saunders the following years went and joined Exeter City from Team Bath as well. So the connection was there. I only had a season there, but fully enjoyed it and a fantastic route into professional football, allowing you to study while still basically being in a full-time football environment.
But you'd already made one of the major transitions in your professional football life at that point, because for several years you were a non-league goalkeeper and then you switched to centre-half.
Yeah, a strange story, and it depends how long we got, because it goes back a long way.
You tell us it. No. Tell us well, it. I can't wait.
Just to start with, Clem, you know, throughout my childhood, I basically played for my age group as a goalkeeper, but I was good enough to play for the older age group as an outfield player. And like all young kids do, I just wanted to play as much football as I could. The fact that I was a goalkeeper was probably partly to my older brother as well, so I always had to go in next to receive shots off my older brother. And I was a talented enough goalkeeper, and with a professional club as a schoolboy. I was at Preston North End until I was 16 as a goalkeeper, but carried on playing outfield throughout my schoolboy years. Didn't get a YTS as a goalkeeper, went into the non-league scene. And it just so happened that at Bursko, the non-league club local to myself, I was in their youth team as a goalkeeper, and their first team goalkeeper got injured and their second choice was suspended. And I actually got forced from, you know, age 16, 17 into their first team, and then sort of kept my spot in relation to that. So my first opportunity at a good level of football was as a goalkeeper. But even when that was happening, I was still playing Sunday league football. I was still playing college as a centre-half. Once I went to university, I carried on playing as a centre-half as well, and actually got picked for England Universities under Paul Tisdale and Jed Roddy at Team Bath. And they didn't know that I played in goal non-league. Throughout my time at Sheffield Hallam University, I played for Matlock Town and Hucknall and Guiseley as a goalkeeper. But they didn't know that. Whenever you fill out the forms for England Universities, you just put your clubs you play for. So they thought I was a non-league centre-half in the north of England. Probably a good job the location was such a big part away from Bath and obviously the south. And they invited me down to Team Bath as a centre-half, and I had a trial there and then got signed for a year's period. And then obviously a year later, that's when I got that first chance at professional football as a centre-half.
Brilliant story. I love it. Were you ever at the sort of height of your professional career as a player? Did you ever have a moment where you nearly lost it and say you were going up for a header to make a clearance and you nearly put your hands in the air to catch it?
No. I mean, it's strange because ever since I turned professional, I kind of put the gloves away and I've not made it too big a deal. But people obviously asked me to write the questions in relation to that because there's not many people who've gone into professional football who had that background and that upbringing in relation to their football experience. But if anything, it made me level as a footballer. It trained my brain as best it possibly could in terms of 6 years as a non-league goalkeeper, so to speak. But also gave me the idea to where the ball would be at certain times of danger, which probably helped my defensive attributes further on in my career. I always used to love winding the goalkeepers up at every club. I've been out to say I'm a better goalkeeper than they are. And every now and then I'd receive a couple of shots in training, but only for a bit of fun. But it's just a story which probably adds to a certain type of career and a certain type of pathway I've gone through.
You seem remarkably at ease and comfortable in your own skin. How has the transition been since you took over from Paul Tisdale?
Look, any manager will tell you, a whirlwind to start with. Obviously, we were on the back of losing a playoff final for the second year on the run. There was a lot of, not disgruntled fans, but disappointed fans, which we'd not made a step into League One because we had some outstanding players at the time. And the rumour mill was rife in terms of Paul's future. And obviously, when the club and Paul made the decision that Paul would go to MK and move on from Exeter City, you know, it'd be an incredible 12-year period. And I'd played a part in that in relation to 4 years as a player. And then when I came back to the club, 18 months as a coach. So it was a strange time. But when, you know, when I was put in front of the board and sat in front of them, I didn't really have time to think about, not the bigger picture, but think about too many things which had gone previously. And I just had to make a decision in relation to accepting the job. And then once you're in the hot seat, so to speak, it comes so quickly. Because we've been in the playoff final, where it was only a three-week period before pre-season started, a couple of players obviously went to MK Dons with Paul, some out of contract. We lost some of our better performing players. And I had to rebuild a squad and a club, if that makes sense. Paul left it in a fantastic position, but the squad was an ageing squad, and I had to just try and get some youth and some legs back in the team. And we feel we you know, for the first 18 months, we were wrestling that fact, and we got our best team out in the second season. Fell agonisingly short in the playoff final, where we got absolutely mullered by Northampton and deservedly got beat on the day. But that season, we'd generally been in the top three all year round before the season got suspended. And that was a real, you know, a kick in the teeth. And then, as any manager will tell you, managing through the pandemic has been a totally new experience to every single manager. And naturally, Exeter City made rightly difficult decisions in terms of cost cutting. And we went really young last season. Felt the benefits of it this season because we got a stronger squad full of young players, and we sold a couple of them as well, and we'll sell a couple more in the next 12 to 18 months. So it's been an interesting 4 years, but one where I've felt comfortable because I've always known the football club, and that's something I always speak to other managers and coaches who want to be managed. You've got to fully understand what you're getting into before you get into it.
Do you have such an open dialogue with the way the club is run, which is that you will say to them, yeah, okay, I'll go young to get you through this period, but you obviously realise there will be an impact on the pitch? And do you think...
Absolutely.
You do. And do you think expectations of supporters are in any way dampened and a bit more patient because the club is being run so prudently?
Yeah, so first and foremost, there'll be very few football clubs in the Football League who aren't in debt. But we don't allow ourselves to go into debt. So we've got a certain amount of money in our bank account to keep the club running on a daily basis, weekly basis, annual basis, which is the right way to run most businesses. But it also means you're restricted at times. So like you said, after that, the defeat against Northampton, we made a conscious decision to go as young and as cheap as we possibly could for the benefit of the longevity of the football club, for basically survival. And what happened was I honestly warned the board that we could be in a relegation battle that season because that's how weak the squad looked on paper with the inexperience of some of the group. But we still managed to be competing towards the right end of the table and just missed out on the playoffs on the last day of the season. So it showed the strength of the academy at XSC and their continual ability to produce players who are going to be first-team players now. You know the level well as anyone else, and it is a brutal league, so young players often get eaten up at this level, but we keep on backing them, we keep on giving them the opportunity, and we keep on selling them, and that keeps us in a good financial position as a football club. But fans do understand that we are restricted at times, and when you look at the might of other clubs at our level in terms of squad and size and standard of player, we're not quite on the same level as them, but somehow we keep on producing players who are able to keep us competitive. And we've had a good enough start to this season to still believe that we can compete at the right end of the table this time around. And we're always looking to add quality to the bunch we've already got. But we know January's around the corner. We know what will come in January, and we also know what will come at the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, should we praise the board as well for being cute, clever and ballsy with stuff like the Ollie Watkins sell to Brentford, where perhaps they might have taken an extra 100 grand at the time of departure, but they went for the sell-on clause, which was considerable when he then moved to Villa. I mean, that takes a bit of bottle, doesn't it, in the circumstances Exeter to find themselves?
Absolutely. And as much as the board will take credit, I've got to give huge credit to Paul Tisdale and Steve Perryman, because if there's ever a pair of, you know, intellectual individuals who've been there and done it and understood what could happen with Ollie's future, then it was certainly those two. And that deal from Brentford has made us financially stable. He's allowing us to build a new training ground building. So we've got new buildings on the way here, and huge investment for the club. And maybe no one could have quite envisaged his move to the Premier League in terms of Aston Villa and the England caps on top of that. But there was certainly a feeling that if Ollie got it right in the Championship, he's so close to being a Premiership player, which he's obviously proved as well. And the fact he's gone on to the international level is fantastic. So like you touched upon, rightly so, praising the board, but also testament goes to Paul and Steve in the role they played in that deal.
Isn't it funny where life takes us, that I'm talking to this northerner who's been around all those kind of iconic sort of northwest non-league clubs, who then has been quite a nomad as a professional as well, with your Exeters and Charltons and Cheltenhams, and I'm sure I've forgotten one on the end there as well. But it's funny where we end up, isn't it, in life? I mean, are you fully entrenched in the southwest now then?
I am. You are invested in the club. You have to be as manager first and foremost. But I was already had that connection from those 4 years as a player. I was lucky enough to captain the team. We got a couple of promotions in that time, and we had a fantastic period for the club's history. And I played a small part in relation to that. So I had a connection down there already. I had, you know, a property to move back to. But also, you speak about luck and opportunity. It was Paul who gave me my opportunity back as a coach at the club, and he didn't have to do that. When Danny Butterfield left to take a job at Southampton, then an opportunity arose, and I just finished my full-time playing career and was just starting my coaching career at Hartbury College. So Paul brought me back to that club. So timing's a key aspect in relation to that. And then the way the club has treated me over the years and giving me the opportunity as manager, I've been fully appreciative of what the club has done for me in my playing career and my coaching career and my management career, and hopefully I'm trying to repay that faith by keeping the club as stable as I can, keep producing a competitive team, but also understanding that they've given me a fantastic opportunity, and as always at all levels other clubs show interest at different times, but my focus is fully on XSC.
If I look at the League Two table right now, I mean, Forest Green Rovers, self-explanatory. Obviously, Northampton have been on a good run over the last few, but then it feels quite wide open that it could be another one of those epic Sky Bet League Two seasons where maybe there's an automatic promotion place still up for grabs right to the last game of the season.
Definitely, without a doubt. And similar to what happened with Bolton last season, I think there's probably three or four huge clubs at our level who will just go from strength to strength in January. So some of those well-backed financially clubs will bring in another three, four, possibly five or six players and start producing the results they expected at the start of the season. And as a so-called smaller club, we've got to hold on to those teams around us and keep on producing good enough displays. And like I say, if we keep ourselves level, we keep the majority of the squad fully fit, and we have a little bit of luck, there's no reason why we can't compete towards the top end of the table. You'll have seen in the last 2 weeks I've lost Sam Nombe out for a certain amount of time with a torn hamstring, Alex Hartridge and Pierce Sweeney last weekend, Tim DeYoung's picked up an injury, and all of a sudden that naturally weakens the group. So January will be a big time for us because we won't be able to bring in a lot of players, but we might be able to bring in one or two and obviously keep hold of some of the younger ones as well.
Love chatting to you. Thanks for sharing your stories. I better let you go because you need to go and charge your phone up for when you get all those phone calls for the other Matt Taylor coming up in January.
Absolutely.
Great to talk to you, Matt.
Brilliant. Cheers, Glenn. Thank you.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2, it was a fourth consecutive win for Northampton Town as they continued to chase down leaders Forest Green Rovers, their latest at Harrogate Town. Having gone 12 games without a win, Carlisle United have got two in their last three, their latest at fellow strugglers Stevenage. Less good news off the pitch for Carlisle, though, as they seek new investment following the collapse of a long-running takeover deal. That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Matt Taylor, to Cole Stockton and to Tony Mowbray. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.